So, Victor, I'd like to call on your historical prowess for a moment, if I may. Over the past few years, there's been a lot of talk about cultural tensions in the United States reaching levels that feel almost like the run-up to the Civil War. And it's been easy to dismiss some of these as overheated, but it's quite clear, given what we've seen just in the past year, whether it was Antifa and Black Lives Matter or the protesters at the Capitol, that as a nation, it does feel like the engine is starting to overheat. And one thing you could say about the actual Civil War is that once it became a literal clash of arms, you could at least see your way to a resolution. There was a war. The war concluded in a decisive way, which is not to minimize how long it took the Black population in the South to enjoy full citizenship rights. But nevertheless, with our current tensions, it's difficult to imagine any decisive resolution. It's difficult to imagine anything beyond just an endless cycle of increasing acrimony and polarization. How do societies function with an equilibrium this contentious and this seemingly unstable?
Well, they don't. And so how are we functioning? Not very well, but we're self-selecting. So we have these red states now that are normal and traditional, and then we have these avant-garde blue states, and people are self-selecting. And as we know in California, they're doing it at a kind of accelerated rate. That's one way we deal with it. The other way we deal with it is, and I've used that word before, conservatives just have a monastery of the mind. NFL, don't watch it. They say NBA, never turn it on anymore. You know, they're down. Their audience is just crashed. If it wasn't for China, they wouldn't exist. Go to a Hollywood movie, not on your life. Television, never watch network news. Wouldn't be caught dead watching it. Universities, don't trust a word they say. Don't give them any money. So that's what's happening. People are self-selecting. The problem is, as I see it, that the levers of influence and power in the country are the universities, the public education lobby and industry, K through 12, entertainment, New York and Los Angeles entertainment, everything from late night comedy to sitcoms, Hollywood, Silicon Valley, Wall Street, professional sports, and they control popular culture, finance, and the method in which we communicate and the method in which we're taught. And that represents, in these two coastal corridors, about 30% of the country, 40%. The rest are traditional. And even though as popular as Donald Trump got, we saw with the House elections that it is a majority of people who don't follow that model, that blue state mentality or ideology. They do want closed borders. They do want a big military. They do support the police. They do want a racially blind society. They do believe in integration and assimilation, intermarriage, and not racial chauvinism. They think immigration should be only legal, measured, diverse, meritocratic. So, but they don't have any of those influences, so they can't get their word out, and they get very frustrated and angry. A final thing, though, these are not just, bookends. There's a difference in ideology, and the left's ideology is that it is morally superior, that its aims are, they don't even use the word equality more. That's a taboo word. They use the word equity, equality of result, and they are so noble and so superior in their ethos to everybody else that any means necessary are justified to getting there. And what that means is if all of you have a member in your family who texts you and says, I'm never going to speak to you again. I cannot believe you voted for Trump. That's coming from the left. I don't think very many people in this audience text their relative or their brother or their mother and say, I cannot believe you voted for Joe Biden. They're live and let live. They don't do that. Same thing with what was shocking about the Capitol violence was that conservatives don't do that. All those Trump rallies were peaceful. Antifa and BLM were not. They're not going on in Portland as we speak. And so the right, when you get a conservative professor and he goes into a university, the first thing he doesn't think, how do I get rid of all these leftists in here and silence them? He thinks, wow, you know, live and let live. But the left thinks, I got to go after that guy. And it's kind of ironic because they told us that that's what conservatives under the McCarthy period or the Salem witch trials, et cetera. But it's actually the other way. It's more of the French Revolutionary Reign of Terror. And they're not tolerant people. And you can see that in, you know, the way that they pick and choose. So one day it's Orwellian. And I mean by that is they create alternate reality. One day we wake up and we should all defund the police. Next day we wake up and we need more police around the Capitol. One day, retired generals are saying, you know what, the worst thing in the world you could do is use the military to quell disturbances, even though they burned a church and they were on their way across the lawn into the White House, it looked like. The next day we wake up and, wow, we have 20,000 troops in Washington. That's really great. We haven't seen that since the Civil War. And so it's just a fluid relativist concept. And they've got, as I said, these engines of wealth and influence and communication. So I don't see it getting better. What Donald Trump did, people think he created it. He was the first Republican to reply to it in kind. Mitt Romney did not. George W. Bush did not. John McCain did not. Trump's idea was, if they're going to do this, I'm going to hit him back with megatonnage. And that's what caused a lot of the latest acrimony, but it preceded him. We were supposed to be nice guys and lose, you know, 46% and get patted on the head and said, you were sober and judicious. Hey, I'm really sorry about that campaign. I really didn't mean to say that Paul Ryan pushed people off cliffs or, you know, Mitt Romney tortured his dog on top of his car, but that's what happened. But now we're all friends and you can be a minority party. And that's how things have gone.
That point, Victor, there is a contingent of people who think that Donald Trump's political future essentially ended the moment those protesters breached the Capitol. Moreover, there are some observers, some of them happy about this, some of them quite worried about it, who worry that were Donald Trump to disappear from the political scene, that Trumpism would go with him. So I'd like to get your diagnosis on both questions. One, the extent to which this is a fatal blow to Donald Trump's political future. And two, maybe more importantly, the extent to which the populist conservative instinct is really reliant on the vessel of Donald Trump to have any serious political purchase.
Yeah, as an analogy, you might look at Me Too and what happened to people like Al Franken or Garrison Keillor or Matt Lauer. Are they ruined? Are they coming back? I don't know the answer to that, but there was an hysterical phase. And it kind of ended when Joe Biden and Tara Reid had far more persuasive evidence of having been sexually assaulted than, you know, Karen Blasey Ford did about a 17-year-old Brett Kavanaugh. But the point was, when she was just laughed at and dismissed, I think unfairly, then Me Too just doesn't exist as it did. And I think this hysteria about Trump is, I guess we would call it peak anti-Trumpism, was, I think it was reached last night with the impeachment. And now people are going to take a deep breath and they're going to say, let me think about it. Here's his record, and it's pretty good. I don't approve of his theatrics, his language, but here's what he did. And then, did we really have to impeach him twice? Did we really have to have Mueller? Wasn't the Russian hoax, you know, wasn't that just a waste of time? Why are we doing this now when we don't have people getting vaccinated? We're $28 trillion in debt. We're locked down. We're in a recession. We have this COVID. Why are the Democrats doing this? And Trump is off Twitter. He can't communicate. So he's a sympathetic, martyred figure. So my feeling is, even though he lost a golden opportunity in late November just to say, you know what, I reluctantly accept the election, and I'm going to, if you thought Andrew Jackson was a populist hero, just watch what I'm going to do, because we're going to save that election in Georgia. We're going to save us from socialism. And then I'm going to be a whirlwind to get our house back and increase it, get a supermajority in the Senate. And he had done that. It's going to be harder for him to do that now. But I don't think it's impossible, because he's got one great ally, and that's the loony left. And I know them so well. And they're when, you know, Meghan McCain says she wants to put people in Gitmo that were at the Capitol. I'm thinking, would that include your father, who probably illegally passed around the Steele dossier that was really a character assassination piece of lies and did the country enormous damage? John McCain was a purveyor of that. Does that mean, and we're hearing Eugene Robinson writes that we need to re-education and reprogram people? That comes right out of North Korea. And so we're going to hear that Joe Manchin says, you know, I'm open to letting Puerto Rico in as a state. And so when that all starts, people are going to say, well, what is there to stop it? And it's not going to be Ben Sasse, and it's not going to be the Bulwark, and it's not going to be National Review, who's got credibility at stopping it. And it's some gunslinger that'll come out and stop it. I don't know if that gunslinger is going to be Trump, but it's somebody going to say it's not going to happen. And a sober and judicious Jeb Bush, who says, you know, illegal immigration is an act of love, isn't going to cut it. It's going to be some populist nationalist figure. And there's a lot of them on the, there's a lot of them on the horizon. I mean, DeSantis in Florida is doing a good job. Tom Cotton's done pretty well. Cruz has recalibrated himself. I don't know if Nikki Haley and Marco Rubio can do that as well as Cruz. Then there's Pompeo, who was loyal to the end. He had a very distinguished career. Christian Noem seems to be with a Sarah Palin background, but she's more politically experienced and savvy at this stage of her career than Sarah was. So I'm pretty confident that the agenda will be there, but there will be lieutenants that could be generals, depending on how well or not Trump is recalibrated. But he has to recalibrate himself the way Nixon did after, you know, Nixon in 62 lost the governorship. He said, you don't have to kick around Dick Nixon anymore. I remember everybody just was so happy. I mean, he lost in a landslide to Edmund G. Brown. He's all through, and he'll never have a chance. And the party's been taken over by Goldwater, and they don't want him. And then after the Goldwater wipeout, the guy was just a new man. He was the new Nixon in 60-81, and he won in the landslide 72.
Final question that I'll put to you. The extraordinarily odd thing about this moment is that in January of years divisible by four, we are almost always talking about the future because we're on the cusp of a new presidential administration. For the most part right now, that's not where the conversation is. We're all looking backwards at these issues around the last administration. So let's end here with what's to come. You wrote recently at American Greatness that the country, this is a quote, the country in 2021 is facing a number of existential crises that will only accelerate in the months ahead. Walk us through the ones that are weighing most heavily on your mind.
We have 28 trillion dollars in debt, and we're running about a $2 trillion deficit. And we have all of the stimuli exhausted that gets us out of, and we're in a recession. We're going to have negative, well, we're going to get out of it because there's going to be pent-up demand. But my point is, how do you stimulate economy when you're already at zero interest and you have a huge budget deficit and then you have all this debt? It's going to be very hard. Nobody's talking about it. Joe Biden's not saying, you know, I'm going to raise taxes and then I'm going to balance the budget. Not at all. And then you have this new racial divisions, and it's like something we've never seen before. Nancy Pelosi said it's white people that did this. And I don't think anybody said, you know, when they were looting and arson, it's black people. Or when Roz Simone took over downtown Seattle, they said, well, he's black. People didn't say that. And you have Tucker's been all over this, but the nominee for the Civil Rights Division of the Justice Department has a paper trail as a Harvard student. It's pretty wacky that people with darker skins are genetically superior to whites and they're primitive people and their brains are smaller. She's going to be the head of the Civil Rights Division. And then in addition to that, the 1619 architect, Hannah Jones, wrote, you know, letters to Notre Dame on the same genetic stuff. And so When you'd have people talking about then truth and reconciliation committees and re-education and deprogramming and hunting down people where they work, if they were ever supported or worked for Trump to deplatform and to ruin them, it's kind of scary. I think a lot of people are frightened that this is not the United States that they knew. So what is Joe Biden going to do with all this? Is he going to do what? Have a big deficit? Is he, one of the reasons that we made it through this lockdown so far was that we had almost a 3% GDP economy and record low unemployment because Donald Trump hit the gas pedal on fracking, horizontal drilling, gas and oil production, incentives to bring back offshore capital, stopped outsourcing, stopped illegal immigration, helped entry-level wages increase, tax reform, all of that, deregulation. Is he going to bring all of that back? If he does, we're going to get a stagnant economy. And so what is he going to do in the Middle East? Is he going to say to Saudi Arabia, please don't recognize Israel? You know, the Palestinians are just critical to this issue. And when you Arab nations just kind of, you know, just freelance and say you're going to accept Israel as an equal partner or it's a legitimate nation, what about the Palestinian? And, you know, let's get back in that Iran deal and get back to monitoring their uranium. And tariffs are just, they're just not the way to go. China, is, as Joe Biden said, is a proper world citizen that we need to encourage. Is that what we're going to do? If we do, we're in big trouble. But those are the things that are threatening us. I think people are going to, what is Joe Biden going to do when he says he's going to give amnesty for, 11 million people automatically, and he's not going to deport anybody? He should read the Fresno Bee every night and see how many people have been arrested that are undocumented or DUI where somebody's killed and the driver takes off. And he said that DUI would not count as a felony. Is he really, is he going to tear down the wall, not build anymore? So what I'm getting at is everybody hated Trump, the person, but they didn't look at what he actually did. And now by extension, because his fingerprints are on it, you're going to have to destroy it. But to destroy it, it's going to hurt yourself. And that's perfectly possible they'll do that. And it'll be interesting to see. I have a sneaking suspicion there's going to be people in the Democratic Party that will say, if we get rid of the filibuster and pack the court with the Electoral College, and have a national voting bill, and we do all this stuff, go after the Second Amendment, I'm not going to get elected. AOC will get elected. The Squad will get elected. Elizabeth Warren will get elected. But I'm not going to get elected in the state, you know, where I'm a representative in Colorado, or I have a billet, a Senate seat in Arizona or something. So we'll see.
You've been listening to the Classicist Podcast with Victor Davis Hanson. Remember, you can read all of Victor's work at victorhanson.com, and he's on Twitter at VDHanson. And if you enjoy the show, please rate it on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. For Victor Davis Hanson, I'm Troy Sinek. Thanks for listening.
Ricochet. Join the conversation.